Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
Welcome to our podcast, The Screwtape Letters, Confronting Evil in Our Time. I'm Ian Faith.
And I'm Galen Belinsky. In each episode, we will unpack one of C.S. Lewis's 31 letters and illuminate the nefarious schemes that the devil and his minions play in our world today.
Understanding how the demonic forces seek to separate us from God helps us to expose them,
reject them, and pursue Jesus as the center of our lives.
Subscribe and join us and our guests on this journey, The Screwtape Letters.
My dear Wormwood, obviously you are making excellent progress. My only fear is lest in attempting to hurry the patient, you awaken him to a sense of his real position. For you and I, who see that position as it really is, must never forget how totally different it ought to appear to him. We know that we have introduced a change of direction in his course, which is already carrying him out of his orbit around the enemy. But he must be made to imagine that all the choices which have affected this change of course are trivial and revocable. He must not be allowed to suspect that he is now, however slowly, heading right away from the sun on a line which will carry him into the cold and dark of utmost space. For this reason, I am almost glad to hear that he is still a churchgoer and a communicant. I know there are dangers in this, but anything is better than that he should realize the break he has made with the first months of his Christian life. As long as he retains externally the habits of a Christian, he can still be made to think of himself as one who has adopted a few new friends and amusements, but whose spiritual state is much the same as it was 6 weeks ago. And while he thinks that, we do not have to contend with the explicit repentance of a definite, fully recognized sin, but only with his vague, though uneasy, feeling that he hasn't been doing very well recently. This dim uneasiness needs careful handling. If it gets too strong, it may wake him up and spoil the whole game. On the other hand, if you suppress it entirely, which, by the by, the enemy will probably not allow you to do, we lose an element in the situation which can be turned to good account. If such a feeling is allowed to live, but not allowed to become irresistible and flower into real repentance, it has one invaluable tendency. It increases the patient's reluctance to think about the enemy. All humans, at nearly all times, have some such reluctance, but when thinking of him involves facing and intensifying a whole vague cloud of half-conscious guilt, this reluctance is increased tenfold. They hate every idea that suggests him, just as men in financial embarrassment hate the very sight of a bank book. In this state, your patient will not omit, but he will increasingly dislike his religious duties. He will think about them as little as he feels he decently can beforehand, and forget them as soon as possible when they're over. A few weeks ago, you had to tempt him to unreality and inattention in his prayers. But now you will find him opening his arms to you and almost begging you to distract his purpose and benumb his heart. He will want his prayers to be unreal, for he will dread nothing so much as effective contact with the enemy. His aim will be to let sleeping worms lie. As this condition becomes more fully established, you will be gradually freed from the tiresome business of providing pleasures as temptations. As the uneasiness and his reluctance to face it cut him off more and more from all real happiness, and as habit renders the pleasures of vanity and excitement and flippancy at once less pleasant and harder to forego, for that is what habit fortunately does to a pleasure, you will find that anything or nothing is sufficient to attract his wandering attention. You no longer need a good book, which he really likes, to keep him from his prayers or his work or his sleep. A column of advertisements in yesterday's paper will do. You can make him waste his time not only in conversation he enjoys with people whom he likes, but also in conversations with those he cares nothing about on subjects that bore him. You can make him do nothing at all for long periods. You can keep him up late at night, not roistering, but staring at a dead fire in a cold room. All the healthy and outgoing activities which we want him to avoid can be inhibited, and nothing given in return. So that at last he may say, as one of my own patients said on his arrival down here, I now see that I spent most of my life in doing neither what I ought nor what I liked. The Christians describe the enemy as one without whom nothing is strong, and nothing is very strong. Strong enough to steal away a man's best years, not in sweet sins, but in a dreary flickering of the mind over it knows not what and knows not why, in the gratification of curiosity so feeble that the man is only half aware of them, in drumming of fingers and kicking of heels, in whistling tunes that he does not like, or in the long, dim labyrinth of reveries that have not even lust or ambition to give them a relish, but which, once chance association has started them, the creature is too weak and fuddled to shake off. You will say, these are very small sins, and doubtless, like all young tempters, you are anxious to be able to report spectacular wickedness. But do remember, the only thing that matters is the extent to which you separate the man from the enemy. It does not matter how small the sins are, provided that their cumulative effect is to edge the man away from the light and out into the nothing. Murder is no better than cards if cards can do the trick. Indeed, the safest road to hell is the gradual one, the gentle slope, soft underfoot, without sudden turnings, without milestones, without signposts. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.
All right, back at it, Ian. Screwtape Letters. Number 12, idle hands are the devil's playground is a common phrase that comes to mind reading this episode. Wormwood is having some success in pulling his patient away from God, pulling him, he describes it as pulling him almost like a planet that's slowly being pulled out of orbit away from the sun, which is not only a source of light, but heat and life, and out of the abyss of nothing. The demonic constantly trying to pull us away from meaning and purpose and calling in life to a life of uselessness.
And it seems that letter 12 is a bit of a crossroads as well. For anyone reading all 31 letters, you'll see it in letter 12. It's there's definitely a change happening. He's at a crossroads. Screwtape is at a crossroads with Wormwood. And yeah, it's a deep episode. It's a deep letter because if you read it, you could read this without any sort of backstory and go, what on earth is that?
Right.
You could come away with nothing out of it. So let's unpack it.
Okay, let's do it. So first of all, my thoughts on this, I really thought this was a powerfully deep episode, like you said, but he's not talking about anything that is really that out of the ordinary. In fact, it's actually the opposite. He's talking about pulling your patient away, pulling his attention to just off of important things. He starts off by getting just a very common divorcing of his religious life, his walk with the Lord, and his everyday life.
Yep.
If he can slowly drive a wedge and try to create different categories and different... Here's his religious life over here, and now let's get back to your regular life. He actually mentions this about 6 weeks after probably his conversion.
Well, I think it's about 6 weeks after the friends. That's where I'm seeing that.
Oh, okay.
So remember the friends that come into his life? I'm seeing that as like the 6 weeks from that, and the conversion being from this ordinary man who started going to church, and then this change happened. And I think it's in about letter 7 or 8 where these people come into his world. And yeah, I see that as the change that they're going through right now.
Mm.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But he's like really worried that the patient, the man, is going to become aware of the things going on in the background of his life, rather than him just, number 8 bus goes by, newspaper, you know, don't worry, don't look. All of a sudden, they're worried that he's becoming a little aware.
Because and that dynamic that they're specifically talking about is what this guy gets into the Christian life. Now he's on, meets the Lord, and now he's going to attempt to live for the Lord. And now let's just try to slowly pull him away. Into a phrase that he refers to it as dim uneasiness. And it's literally, it's that concept that we might understand as Christians, a lukewarm Christian.
Yes.
I'm not on fire for the Lord anymore. The honeymoon is over, the exciting season of the newness is over, and now I'm in the battle of the Christian life, and I'm not quite still engaged and activated like I was when I first came to Christ, but I haven't fallen away from the faith. That's that you're saying he wants to keep him right there in that
right
sweet
there,
spot.
That sweet spot.
Don't let him become too aware of it. Live it. Let him stay in this foggy, nebulous area.
Because he does say, like, the patient has changed, but he still attends church, and he doesn't think that he has yet moved away from God. So they know that they're in that danger zone in a lot of ways for mm-hmm. them. That if they're trying to like pull him away, that there's still a chance that he could go deeper, or there's still a chance he could get pulled away more. And just to what you were saying, there's a great line that we'll actually save for the end of this dissection of this letter, which all you listeners, you wait till you hear this. It's actually so revelatory within this actual letter 12. And so, you know, he's talking about his reluctance to think about God. And like you said, he's becoming this part-time Christian. And I think we see that a lot in the world, where I was actually at a graduation party yesterday and talking to someone about what we're doing with the Screwtape Letters Confronting Evil in Our Time podcast. And I was saying to them that my journey with Christ over the last few years, and over my lifetime, I've gone from being a 7-day Christian to a 3-day Christian to a Sunday Christian, back to a 7-day Christian. And, you know, the older you get and the more you go through those peaks and valleys, and, you know, there's a great line earlier in the letters of the law of undulation.
Right? The ups and the downs, the peaks and the valleys.
And I think that relates to your walk with Christ as well.
Yeah.
You know, because it is really hard. Like, you know, even King David said, you know, my God, why have you forsaken me?
Mm-hmm.
In the Psalms, right? Mm-hmm. So even someone like him who's writing the Psalms had that
feels
moment.
Feels strange. Yeah.
Yes, right? So you go through those moments. And then when you, know, read the Psalms more, obviously there's certain things that he does in there, which he's absolutely moved away from being a 7-day
mm-hmm.
Christian and having that 7-day relationship.
Right.
So maybe it's harder to maintain than, you know, we even give it credit for, because of there is that spiritual warfare going on
right.
in the background constantly.
Well, and I think there is a natural tendency, a couple things. I think we have a natural tendency to end up in that rut of not constantly advancing in our walk. And he says at the bottom of the first page in the chapter, says as long as he remains externally, as long as he retains externally the habits of a Christian, because we still do the things, so it's very easy to like, well, I still go to church.
Yeah.
And he talks about, as long as he thinks about it as he's about to engage in his religious activity and then forgets about it as soon as he goes away, I feel like that position, it's very easy to gravitate towards that as a natural disposition. And I think also it's natural to gravitate towards idleness.
Yeah.
And the enemy is constantly going to try to exploit that fact. So you'll feel Christian enough because you still went to church, so you feel good about yourself, but you're going to slowly forget that spending a couple hours in the building, you know, doesn't make me any more Christian than going to McDonald's makes me a cheeseburger. Right? You know, at the end of the day, I've got to really constantly be growing. And I guess that's probably a good lesson. If you're not, there is no pause button. There's only forward or backwards. You're
right.
Either growing in your walk with the Lord, you're either advancing, and if you're just idle, you're really moving backwards.
Yeah, right, correct. And it's amazing, like the language that C.S. Lewis uses in this to describe that. Some of the terms he uses are just amazing. And there's a line he talks about where Screwtape says one of his patients who has ended up in hell finally came to the realization, and he quotes, "I now see that I spent most of my life doing neither what I ought nor what I liked." And that's a man in hell. And the great line about that, and it actually sort of makes me think of you know, Dennis Prager mentioned once that the Jewish faith believes that once you get up to see, once you die and you meet God, God, one of the questions God asks you is, did you partake in all of the good things I laid out for you? So the whole idea there that the man was doing not or what he should or what he liked.
Not even what he liked.
Right. Yeah. Is that I think that there is a lot that in the world and that is joyous and beautiful, and they cover it in letter 11 about worship and joy and music, that there's certain people out there that think, I don't want to be a 7-day Christian because they seem like just miserable and satisfied people all the time. But that's not the case. Because there is joy. There is, you know, there are amazing things to do, amazing experiences to be had that God provides for you. They just don't have to be salacious and on the dark side.
Right.
And that's where, like, you know, I think this line in there about that is where there's a sense where he's talking in this letter that the patients fall into the ordinary, and he's got these friends who now pull him a little bit away from church, and they're getting him thinking about things that are not godlike, but they're just day-to-day things to keep him distracted, make him feel like he's better than other people, and they covered that.
But it's constantly pulling. There's that word again that he uses in the chapter, kind of one of the foundational words in the concept. It uses it in the prologue of the book, if I remember correctly, that fuddlement.
Yes.
Keep him just in the busy with the silly, nonsensical things of life. And what's crazy is that not only does he pull him away from good things, walking with the Lord, reading his Bible, really engaging in good Christian community, really examining what is my mission and calling and purpose in life that God has for me. He ends up, what tends to happen is our time gets filled with the silliest things. You know, one of the things that came to my mind is how much time do we waste on social media?
Correct.
And at the end of the day, in the chapter, he calls it nothing. He actually capitalizes the word nothing and talks about it like it's a thing that the demonic is trying to win us to, pull us away from meaning and purpose and give us nothing.
Nothing is their reward.
Exactly.
Like, so he talks about pulling away into the deepest, darkest, empty space of nothing. Right?
Yeah.
Again, I think he used it a couple of times there. And saying that, you know, these day-to-day things that we get consumed with, like social media, like gaming, and that sort of stuff, that we become too weak and fuddled to even shake them off. Mm. And I think it's a good question for all our listeners is, what in your life are you too weak and fuddled to shake off?
Mm.
What are those things that you just can't quit, that you know bring you nothing in life, that they don't help you grow, they don't help your walk with Christ, and how can you, you know, where can you find help, and how can you find help in getting rid of them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe he talks keeping everybody in that nebulous spot.
Yeah.
Where you're wasting a lot of your time, a lot of your friend groups, the thing that's getting a lot of your energy isn't really advancing your cause, but it's not bad enough for you to really notice.
Yes.
And that's I think even the purpose of this episode is to, like, I had in the notes, I wrote down, like, wake up, Christian, wake up, oh sleeper. And it's just like, see that it happens, because as the demonic is going to make sure you don't err on either side. He doesn't want you to err on the side of becoming too aware that you're getting lukewarm, because if you become aware of it, you'll wake up and snap out of it. And he also says it, and you're probably not going to get him to go too far on the other side where he completely is estranged. He says, the enemy won't allow it. In other words, God is going to call people back in at some point. God really does intervene, but it's that middle space where for some reason we can end up wasting a lot of time and a lot of years. So I think even this episode, what are the things that are just the cloudy, nebulous, vague areas of, I'm not doing anything wrong. You know, he says, you know, sin of a game of cards is more effective than murder if it accomplishes the job.
Well, yeah, because it's that slow march.
It's a slow fade type of thing. Death by a thousand cuts of a little decisions to pull you.
Oh, absolutely. And in there he also talks about, like, getting him to a position where he's disliking his religious duties. And that stood out for me because I think that when people feel engaged with a church, but they don't feel like they're getting any reward from it, or they feel invisible. Like, my mother served at a church for many years, and she found a lot of joy in it. And she also said that, you know, that some people would leave. And I'd say, oh, what, you know, why did that lady leave? She said, because she just felt that she wasn't needed. And I think she probably felt a little bit invisible. And that's going to that whole idea of, like, obviously this man has religious duties that he feels. And I think coming from that whole, and we talked about this earlier, that he's probably Church of England or Lutheran or Catholic. And that he's got these religious duties, whether C.S. Lewis is in here talking about confession and, you know, different days of going to church for different services and things to do in and around the church, that the men's getting to the point of, like, I have these society friends that I hang out with, and I've got to go do this religious thing. And he's obviously not finding or peace with that. But at the same time, back to what Screwtape was saying, is you got to be careful here, because you're going to make him aware. And if all of a sudden he becomes aware, and someone maybe says, hey, so why aren't you coming to church anymore? Maybe that wakes him up, and that gets him thinking.
Yeah, the thought comes to mind is, we're not designed to really enjoy our relationship with God if we're not all in. It's a car is not meant to spend a lot of time in neutral.
Right.
You know, you're not going to enjoy driving, and you can have the greatest sports car in the world. You're not going to enjoy it too much if it never leaves neutral.
So I've got a great question for you here. Do you think we're in the society that we're in, and right, we're recording this 2024, that society's got us to a point, and I honestly believe that the demonic forces have got us to this point where people go, oh, don't inject Jesus into that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why? It's the root of everything. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't I inject it into that? And it's even like, we're going to pray before a meal. You know what I mean? So this is but I think this is part of where society's got us to, which is, how do we get back to that point of understanding that, like, there's a power in praying for your wife, there's a power in praying for your children. Like, I went to a couple of graduation parties this weekend, and we've got more coming up. My son's graduating, and, you know, some of them were for Catholic schools.
Okay.
Absolutely absence of Christ in those parties. And I kept thinking to myself, I thought it would have been an amazingly beautiful touch if they would have stopped and said, hey,
we're going to have a word of prayer.
We're going to pray for our kids.
I think it's a great point. I think we've conceded too much ground to be like, well, you know, we don't want to impose. We want to make sure all the public spaces are as religiously neutral as possible. Yeah. And quite frankly, if the Christians aren't willing to let their voice and presence and their attendance of any social gathering be a witness for Christ, then we've ground.
The war's sort of lost.
Exactly. And I'm not an in-your-face Christian. I don't, you know, go out of my way to talk about Jesus in an obnoxious way to shove it down people's throat. But if there's something I want to do, mention something, or if I'm talking to my wife, I don't hesitate to talk about whatever we're talking about, you know. Obviously appropriate things, but like if we have to talk about things of the Lord or talking about praying for somebody, it's just like, talk about it. I don't care who's around. If that doesn't make sense to you, then ask me why. You know, I think it's a great point. We used to say, I grew up in a generation that was taught, like, no, you never talk about religion or politics. That's like, what a great way to get a dysfunctional culture.
Who introduced that? Because that's not from someone who wanted God in the public square.
Exactly. It was shut those Christians up.
Right. Yeah. It was brilliant because they combined politics and religion.
Right.
Right? So you can understand not talking politics, but like politics and religion.
Yeah.
Because one of them absolutely made schools better when they had. It's just factually correct whether you believe in Christ, believe in God or not. It's factually correct that schools were safer and better places when they said a prayer before they started their day.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
You know, and we don't have to be Christians to believe that is statistically true.
Right.
Right? So, yeah, it's
And how often, no, I see Christians, like, arguing against that, though.
I know.
And it's just like, if we're not the ones that are willing to stand up for Jesus in these arenas.
Yeah.
And not trying to, like, take anything by sword or take anything or like shoving things in people's faces, but just with your own opinion and witness, stand up for Jesus, and it might make a difference in society. You never know.
Because I think the way that ties back to this is as the dark demonic forces try and separate us from God, part of that separation comes with all the little things.
Mm.
All those little moments of, let's not pray before a meal. Yeah, let's not, thank God for this good. It was just luck. It wasn't God. It's like, really? You can prove that empirically? No, you can't. So I believe it was God that did it. So that's where it's going to be. And like C.S. Lewis points out, it's a cumulative effect to separate us from God.
Mm.
Like you said, out of the light into the nothing. And it's that gradual death of a thousand cuts, continually sort of grinding you down to the point where you become a vanilla Christian, you become a Sunday Christian, you almost become a checkbox Christian.
Right.
Yeah. I did church.
Did the thing.
I did Easter. I did Christmas. I must be a good Christian.
Right.
I didn't do anything wrong. And it's kind of interesting because, we've been studying the book of Judges, and it's a tumultuous book of the Old Testament to read. But ultimately, it comes down to they decided to live by what was right in their own eyes.
Mm.
Rather than living by a core set of values and commandments, they decided to. And I think that's the same when you get like religious Christians, is because all of a sudden they're like, yeah, but I just need Easter and Christmas and the rest. I'm good the rest of the year.
Hmm.
Are you?
And it becomes a slow fade to get there, like you said.
It's a super slow fade.
Death by a thousand cuts. I think of that, the law of, delayed gratification, slow and steady wins the race, compound interest. There are these principles that God builds that, slow, steady progress in a direction compounds and it becomes a bigger thing. The demonic counterfeit of that is slowly chipping away, slowly eroding your walk with God. And it's something that one of the lessons of the chapter, it's good to be aware of the fact that it happens very slowly. It happens without us realizing. And the goal of the enemy is to keep us only make tiny little nudges so that you never notice anything changes, to keep what's the phrase you use, dim uneasiness, keep it vague so you're not aware that it's happening.
And like I mentioned at the start of our unpacking of this, there's this great line, and I think it's awesome, which is, on the demonic side, the safest road to hell is the gradual one. And it really made me pause and think when that stood out, because I thought, you're right. It isn't just that moral bank account of big crimes, but it's that, if it's almost an analogous to if you put a penny in a jar every day, how full's that jar going to be after a couple of years?
Right.
Compared with waiting for a bigger check.
Sure.
And this is the trouble with, I think, the way people address life is they're constantly putting these sin pennies in a jar, and slowly but surely they're sliding towards nothingness. And I think one of the markers and as takeaways for people listening to this, look for joy in your life, not just happiness, not just happy moments, but joy. Because I think if you have enough joy in your life, you probably have, and there is such a difference between happiness and joy. I think there will be a marker for you to say to yourself, what do I need to do? What do I need to change to have more of that joy? Because that's what I want. That's what I'm looking for.
Because ultimately the demonic is going to try to be pulling us away to exchange joy for literally nothing. Like the man in hell says, I got, what do you say? I got nothing. Nothing I wanted, or what I liked.
Right. He did nothing that he ought to do, or he liked to do.
Or that I even like to do. So that slow erosion pulls us away from feeling anything. It's a spiritual numbness. Pursue the joy. Reignite the fire for the Lord. Be aware of it. Maybe even the thought of this episode is an activation moment for people listening.
Well said. Well said. Well, that's it for Screwtape Letters 12. And we'll see you next time.